Heyo, and welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune, and this is part one of A Night in Terror Tower by R.L. Stine on Dune Reads Goosebumps. No need for an intro. I've been busy, happy, things are going well. This is a podcast for adults, so there will be cussing. I'm going to go on, once again, racial diatribes, that's what I do. Twitter, at Dune. Facebook, Dune Reads Goosebumps, fucking Instagram, Dune _ M. I don't know. I'm around. You can find me. Unless you're one of those copyright lawyers, then you can't find me at all, suckers. Yeah. That being said, feel better, Geo. Chapter 1 of A Night in Terror Tower. I'm scared, Eddie said. I shivered and zipped up my coat to my chin. Eddie, this was your idea, I told my brother. I didn't beg and plead to see the Terror Tower. You did. He raised his brown eyes to the tower. He raised his brown eye to the tower makes it sound like a much different novel when you start it out like that. A strong gust of wind fluttered his dark brown hair. I have a strange feeling about it, Sue. A bad feeling. I made a disgusted face. Eddie, you're such a wimp. You have a better bad feeling about going to the movies. Only scary movies. Part 5, starring Simon Rex. Apparently people watch that. But not white people, he mumbled. You're 10 years old, I said sharply. It's time to stop being scared of your own shadow. It's just an old castle with a tower, I said, gesturing towards it. Hundreds of tourists come here every day. But they used to torture people here, Eddie said, suddenly looking very pale. They used to lock people in the tower and let them starve to death. Hundreds of years ago, I told him. They don't torture people here anymore, Eddie. They just sell postcards and like little trinkets and then like a lighter that looks at the tower and the flame goes up and you can use it to freebase. We both gazed up at the gloomy old castle built out of gray stones darkened over time. Its two narrow towers rose up like two stiff arms at its sides. During that whole description, I was gesturing wildly. Storm clouds hovered low over the dark towers. The bent old trees in the courtyard shivered in the wind. It didn't feel like spring. The air was heavy and cold. I felt a raindrop on my forehead, then another on my cheek. I grabbed it with my hand and looked at it. It was bird shit. That's not true. I made that up. A perfect London day, I thought. I've been to London, so what? I did podcasting over there. Dune's done things. Okay, I went to London. There's a live comics online there. Whatever, I do things. A perfect London day, I thought. A perfect day to visit the Terror Tower. This was our first day in England, and Eddie and I had been sightseeing all over London. Our parents had to be at a conference at our hotel, so they signed us up with a tour group, and off we went. We toured the British Museum. We walked through Harrod's department store. We went to the Doctor Who sets that Dune couldn't go to. We went to the Sweet Harry Potter sets that Dune didn't go to. We visited Westminster Abbey and Trafalgar Square. Whatever, I didn't go there. For lunch, we had bangers and mash, parentheses, sausage and mashed potatoes, at a real English pub. Then, the tour took a great bus ride. Sitting on top of a bright red double-decker bus, it crashed into a couple. They were happy about it. London was just as I imagined it, big and crowded. Big Mouth strikes again. Why? Well, no more Smith references. Get your head in the game. Narrow streets lined with little shops and jammed with those old-fashioned-looking black taxis. The sidewalks were filled with people from all over the world. Of course, my scaredy-cat brother was totally nervous about traveling around a strange city on our own, but I'm 12 and a lot less wimpy than he is, and I managed to keep him pretty calm. I was totally surprised when Eddie begged to visit Terror Tower. Mr. Starks, our bald, red-faced tour guide, gathered the group together on the sidewalk. There were about 12 of us, mostly old people. They're like 26 and reading podcasts and have lots of gray hairs and a drinking problem. Eddie and I were the only kids. Mr. Starks gave us a choice. That's what black people call Tony Stark. Yo, Mr. Starks! Another museum, or the tower. The tower! The tower! Eddie pleaded. I've got to see the Terror Tower. We took a long bus ride to the outskirts of the city. The shops gave way to rows of tiny red brick houses, Pabst Blue Ribbon. Then we passed even older houses, hidden behind stooped trees and low, ivy-covered walls. When the bus pulled to a stop, we climbed out and followed a narrow street made of bricks, worn smooth over the centuries. The street ended at a high wall. Behind the wall, the Terror Tower rose up darkly. "Hurry, Sue," Eddie tugged at my sleeve. "We'll lose the group." "They'll wait for us," I told my brother. "Stop worrying, Eddie. We won't get lost." We jogged over the old bricks and caught up with the others. Wrapping his long black overcoat around him, Mr. Starks led the way through to the entrance. He stopped and pointed at a pile of gray stones in the large grass-covered courtyard. "That wall was the original castle wall," he exclaimed. "It was built by the Romans in about the year 400.
Ah, just after Jesus built the earth.
London was a Roman city then. Only a small section of the wall still stood. The rest had crumbled or fallen. I couldn't believe I was staring at a wall that was over 1,500 years old. Whoa! We followed Mr. Starks around along the path that led to the castle and its towers. This was built by the Romans to be a walled fort, the tour guide told us. After the Romans left, it became a prison. That started many years of cruelty and torture within these walls. They probably even had an Iron Maiden. I pulled my little camera from my coat pocket and took a picture of the Roman wall. Then I turned and snapped a few pictures of the castle. The sky had darkened even more. I hoped the pictures would come out. This was London's first debtor prison, Mr. Starks explained as he led the way. If you were too poor to pay your bills, you were sent to prison. Unlike Barafala Danta, who just buys some Thanksgiving dinners every day, am I right? Up top. No? Oh, sorry. Which meant that you could never pay your bills, so you stayed in prison forever. It was a catch 420, dog. We passed a small guardhouse. It was about the size of a phone booth.
Wow! Wow!
That was my TARDIS sound. Made of white stones with a slanted roof. I thought it was empty, but to my surprise, a gray uniformed guard stepped out of it, a rifle perched stiffly on his shoulder. I turned back and gazed at the dark wall that surrounded the castle grounds. Look, Eddie, I whispered. You can't see any of the city outside this wall. It's as if we really stepped back in time. Uh-oh. He shivered. I don't know if it was because of my words or because of the sharp wind that blew the old courtyard through it. The wind blew through the courtyard. It didn't just blow the courtyard away. The castle cast a deep shadow over the path. Mr. Starks led us up to a narrow entrance at the side. Then he stopped and turned back to the group. I was startled by a tense, sorrowful expression on his face. I'm sorry to give you this bad news, he said, his eyes moving slowly from one of us to the next. Huh? Bad news? Eddie whispered, moving close to me. You will all be imprisoned in the North Tower, Mr. Starks announced sternly. There you will be tortured until you tell us the real reason why you chose to come here.
Chapter 2.
Eddie let out a startled cry. Other members of the tour group uttered shocked gasps. Mr. Starks began to chuckle as a grin spread over his round, red face. Just a little Terror Tower joke, he said brightly. I've got to have some fun, you know. We all laughed too, except Eddie. He's more into Cat Williams. He still seems shaken. That guy is crazy, Eddie whispered. Actually, Mr. Starks was a very good tour guide, very cheerful and helpful. He seemed to know everything about London. My only problem was that sometimes I had trouble understanding his British accent like Pete Doherty. As you can see, the castle consists of several buildings, Mr. Starks explained, turning serious. That long, low building over there served as a barracks for the soldiers. He pointed across the broad lawn. I snapped a picture of the old barracks. It looked like a long, low hut. Then I turned and snapped a picture of the gray-uniformed guard standing at attention in front of the small guardhouse. I heard several gasps of surprise behind me. Turning back, I saw a large, hooded man creep out of the entrance and sneak up behind Mr. Starks.
The cover of the book also has a hooded man.
He wore an ancient-looking green tunic and carried an enormous battle axe.
just like the guy on the cover of the book. That's probably him.
An executioner. Not to be confused with Sexecutioner, a member of GWAR. He raised the battle axe behind Mr. Starks. Does anyone here need a very fast haircut? Mr. Starks asked casually, without turning around. This is the castle barber. We all laughed. The man in the green executioner's costume took a quick bow, then disappeared back into the building.
This is fun,
Eddie whispered, but I noticed he was clinging very close to me. We are going to enter the torture chamber first, Mr. Starks announced. Please stick together. He raised a red pennant on a long stick. I'll carry this high so you can find me easily. It's so easy to get lost inside. There are hundreds of chambers and secret passages.
Wow, coolers!
I exclaimed. Eddie glanced at me doubtfully.
You're not going to get too scared to go into the torture chamber, are you?
I asked him.
Who?
Me? He replied shakily. You will see some very unusual torture devices, Mr. Starks continued. There was a torture museum in San Diego, and I went to go see it, and they had a bunch of stuff, but what always sticks out in my mind is there a thing, it was called the pear, and it's shaped like a pear. And has a big crank on the outside, and you put it in either the vagina or ass of someone, and it just expands out like a blooming flower full of spikes inside of your body. Oh, God. Oh, God. Horrifying.
The wardens have many ways to inflict pain on their poor prisoners. We recommend that you do not try them at home.
A few idiots laughed. I couldn't wait to get inside.
I ask you again to stick together, Mr. Starks urged as the group began to file through the narrow doorway into the castle. My last tour group was lost forever in there. Most of them are still wandering the dark chambers. My boss really scolded me when I got back to the office. I laughed at his lame joke. So did Dune. He had probably told it 1,000 times. At the entrance, I raised my eyes to the top of the dark tower. It was solid stone, just like me. Getting placed under a dog. No windows except for a tiny square one near the very top. People were actually imprisoned here, I thought. Real people, hundreds of years ago. I suddenly wondered if the castle was haunted. I tried to read the serious expression on my brother's face. I wondered if Eddie was having the same chilling thoughts. We stepped up to the dark entranceway.
Turn around, Eddie, I said. I took a step back and pulled my camera from my coat pocket.
Let's go in, Eddie pleaded. The others are getting ahead of us.
I just want to take your picture at the castle entrance, I said.
I raised the camera to my eye. Eddie made a dumb face. I pressed the shutter release and snapped the picture. I had no way of knowing that it was the last picture I would ever take of Eddie.
Uh-oh.
Mr. Starks led the way down a narrow stairway. Our sneakers squeaked on the stone floor as we stepped into a large, dimly lit chamber. I took a deep breath and waited for my eyes to adjust to the darkness. The air smelled old and dusty. It was surprisingly warm inside. I unzipped my coat and pulled my long, brown hair from under the collar. I could see several display cases against the wall. Mr. Starks led the way to a large wooden structure in the center of the room. The group huddled closely around him.
This is the rack. He pointed to a well-endowed woman.
Just kidding, he proclaimed, waving his hand at the red pennant. He waved at the fucking rack, the torture rack, not some chick's tits. Do I say tits? I'm not a tits person. While I enjoy I say breasts? That's much better. Boobs? Whatever. Tits is weird. I don't feel comfortable. Let's just go back.
This is the rack, he proclaimed, waving his red pen at it.
Wow, it's real, I whispered to Eddie. I'd seen big torture devices like this in movies and comic books, but I never thought they really existed.
The prisoner was forced to lie down here, Mr. Starks continued. His arms and legs were strapped down. When the big wheel was turned, the ropes pulled his arms and legs, stretching them tight. He pointed to the big wooden wheel.
Turn the wheel Did you mean...
Turn the wheel more and the ropes pull tighter, Mr. Stark said, his eyes twinkling merrily. Sometimes the wheel was turned and the prisoner was stretched and stretched until his bones were pulled right out of their fucking sockets. He chuckled. I believe that this is what they call doing a long stretch in prison. Some of the group members laughed at Mr. Stark's jokes, but Eddie and I exchanged solemn glances. Staring at the long wooden contraption with the thick ropes and straps, I pictured someone lying there. I imagined the creak of the wheel turning and the ropes pulling tighter and tighter. This was the moment I knew I was going to get into BDSM. Glancing up, my eye caught a dark figure standing on the other side of the rack. He was very tall and very broad, dressed in a long, black cape. He had pulled a wide-brim hat over his forehead, hiding most of his face in the shadow. His eyes glowed darkly out from the shadow. Was he staring at me? I poked Eddie.
Hey, you see that dude over there?
The one in black.
No. Not the black one. I know Jamal. I'm saying the one in black.
I whispered. Is he in our group? Eddie shook his head. I've never seen him before, he whispered back. He's weird. Why is he staring at us like that? The big man pulled the hat lower. His eyes disappeared beneath the wide brim. His black cape swirled as he stepped back into the shadows. Mr. Starks continued to talk about the rack. He asked if there were any volunteers to try it out. Everyone laughed. I've got to get a picture of this thing, I decided. My friends will think it's really cool, because we don't have Wikipedia yet. I reached into my coat pocket for my camera. Hey! I cried out in surprise. I searched the other pocket. Then, I searched my jeans pocket. I don't believe this, I cried. The camera was gone.
Chapter 4.
Eddie, my camera, I exclaimed. Did you see? I stopped when I saw the mischievous grin on my brother's face. I'll stop clicking on the keyboard. He held up his hand with my camera in it, and his grin grew wider. The mad pickpocket strikes again, he declared. You took it from my pocket? What are you, Romanian? I wailed. Yeah, fuck you, Romanians. I'm getting real edgy with who I hate. I gave him a hard shove that sent him stumbling into the rack. He burst out laughing. Eddie thinks he's the world's greatest pickpocket. That's his hobby, really. He practices it all the time. Is it? Fastest hands on earth, he bragged, waving the camera at me. I grabbed it away from him. You're obnoxious, I told him. I don't know why he enjoys being a thief so much, but he's really good at it. When he slid that camera from my coat pocket, I didn't feel a thing. I started to tell him to keep his hands off my camera, but Mr. Starks motioned for the group to follow him into the next room. As Eddie and I hurried to keep up, I glimpsed at the man in the black cape. He was lumbering up behind us, his face still hidden under the wide brim of his hat. I don't understand why villain characters have no interest in depth perception and always just, I'll cover an eye. Yeah, fuck it. Wear an eye patch. I guess an eye patch is a necessary medical accessory, never mind. I felt a stab of fear in my chest. Was the strange man watching Eddie and me? Why? No, he was probably just another tourist visiting the tower. So why did I have that frightening feeling he was following us? I kept glancing back at him as Eddie and I studied the displays of torture devices in the next room. The man didn't seem interested in the displays at all. He kept near the wall, his black cape fading into the deep shadow, his eyes straight ahead. On us! Look at these, Eddie urged, pushing me toward a display shelf. What the fuck are these? Thumbscrews? Mr. Starks replied, stepping up behind us. He picked one up. It looks like a ring, he explained. See, it slides down over your thumb, like this. He slid the whole metal ring over his thumb. Then he raised his hand so we could see it clearly. There is a screw on the side of this ring. Turn the screw and it digs its way into your thumb. Keep turning it and it digs deeper. And deeper and deeper. Ouch! I declared. Very nasty. Ooh, you nasty. Mr. Starks agreed, setting the thumb screw back on the display shelf. This is a whole room of very nasty items.
I can't believe people were actually tortured with this stuff, Eddie murmured. Well, I should have just converted to Christianity. His face trembled. He really didn't like scary things, especially when they were for real. Wish I had a pair of these to use on you, I teased. Eddie is such a wimp. Sometimes I can't help myself. I have to give him a hard time. I reached behind the rope barrier and picked up a pair of metal handcuffs. They were heavier than I imagined, and they had a jagged row of metal spikes all around the inside. Sue, put those down, Eddie whispered frantically. I slipped one around my wrist. See, Eddie? When you clamp it shut, the jagged spikes cut into your wrist, I told him. I let out a startled gasp as a heavy metal cuff clicked shut. Ow! I screamed, tugging frantically at it. Eddie, help! I can't get it off! It's cutting me! It's cutting me! Five. Ow! A horrified moan escaped Eddie's throat as he gaped at the cuff around my wrist. His mouth dropped open, and his chin started to quiver. Help me! I wailed, thrashing my arm frantically, tugging at the chain. Get me out of this! Eddie turned white as a ghost. I couldn't keep my straight face any longer. I started to laugh. And I slid the handcuff off my wrist. Gotcha back, I jeered. That's for stealing my camera. Now, we're even. I, Eddie sputtered. His dark eyes glowed at me angrily. I thought you were hurt, he muttered. Don't do that again, Sue. I mean it. I stuck my tongue out at him. I know it wasn't very mature. My brother doesn't always bring out the best in me. Follow me, please, Mr. Stark's voice echoed off the stone walls. Eddie and I moved closer to our tour group, huddled around Mr. Stark's. We're going to climb the stairs to the North Tower now, the tour guide announced. As you will see, the stairs are quite narrow and steep, so we will have to go single file. Please watch your step. Mr. Starks ducked his bald head as he led the way through the low, narrow doorway. Eddie and I were at the end of the line. The stone stairs twisted up the tower like a corkscrew. There was no hand railing, and the stairs were so steep and so twisty, I had to hold on to the wall and keep my balance as I climbed. This is the part where Dune goes to Google and searches for the word twisty to see if R.L. Stein made it up. I guess he didn't, and I'm an asshole. Oh god, that was an awkward pause. The air grew warmer as we made our way higher. So many feet had climbed these ancient stones. The stairs were worn smooth, the edges round. I tried to imagine prisoners being marched up these stairs to the tower. Their legs must have trembled with fear. Up ahead, Eddie made his way, slowly peering up at the soot-covered stone walls. It's too dark, he complained, turning back to me. Hurry up, Sue, don't get too far behind. My coat brushed against the stone wall as I climbed. I'm pretty skinny. But the stairway was so narrow, I kept bumping the sides. No fatties allowed on this tour. After climbing for what seemed like hours, we stopped on a landing. Straight ahead of us was a small, dark cell behind metal bars. This is a cell in which political prisoners were held, Mr. Starks told us. Enemies of the king were brought here. You can see it was not the most comfortable place in the world. Moving closer, I saw that the cell contained only a small stone bench and a wooden writing table. What happened to these prisoners? A white-haired woman asked Mr. Starks. Did they stay in this cell for the... Did they stay here for years? No, Mr. Starks replied, rubbing his chin. Most of them were beheaded. I felt a little chill at the back of my neck. I stepped up to the bars and peered into the small cell. Real people stood inside the cell, I thought. Real people held on to these bars and stared out. Sat at that little writing table, paced back and forth in a narrow space, waiting to meet their fate. Swallowing hard, I glanced at my brother. I could see he was just as horrified as I was. We have not reached the top of the tower yet, Mr. Starks announced. Let us continue our climb. The stone steps became steeper as we made our way up the curving stairway. I trailed my hand along the walls as I followed Eddie up to the top. As I climbed, I suddenly had the strangest feeling that I had been here before, that I'd followed the twisting stairs, that I'd climbed to the top of this ancient tower before. Of course, that was impossible. Eddie and I had never been to England before in our lives. The feeling stayed with me as our tour group crowded into a tiny chamber at the top. Had I seen this tower in a movie? Had I seen pictures of it in a magazine? Why did it look so goddamn familiar to me? I shook my head back and forth, as if I was trying to shake away the strange, troubling thoughts. Then, I stepped up beside Eddie and gazed around the tiny room. A small, round window high above our heads allowed a wash of gloomy gray light to filter down over us. That's a good sentence, RL. The rounded walls were bare, lined with cracks and dark stains. The ceiling was low. How low? So low I can't hear you! It's how you should sing solo, so like, no, no one's ever been to the tiki room, where the birds, something, and the flowers bloom in the tiki room. They have the Dole whips. It's Dole pineapple, but it's like a frozen yogurt. It's really good. I was just there less than a week ago. The ceiling was low, so low that Mr. Starks and some other adults had to duck their heads. "Perhaps you can feel the sadness in this room," Mr. Stark said softly, looking at Dune's condo. We all huddled closer to hear him better. Eddie stared up at the window, his expression solemn. "This is the tower room where a young prince and princess were brought," Mr. Starks continued, speaking solemnly. "It was the early 15th century. The prince and princess Edward and Susanna of York were locked in this tiny tower cell." But they banged like crazy, am I right up top? He waved the red pennant in a circle. We all followed it, gazing around the small, cold room. Imagine, two children grabbed away from their home. They're children, that bummed me out. Ignore everything I said previously. Abort, abort! Locked away in this tiny, drab chill. Locked away in the tiny, drab chill of the cell in the top of a tower, Mr. Stark's voice remained just above a whisper. I suddenly felt cold. I zipped my coat back up. Eddie had his hands shoved deep into his jeans pockets. His eyes grew wide with fear as he gazed around the tiny, dark room. The prince and princess weren't up here for long, Mr. Starks continued, lowering the pennant to his side. That night, while they slept, the Lord High Executioner, that's my new rap name, and his men crept up the stairs. Their orders were to smother the two children to keep the prince and princess from ever taking the throne. Mr. Stark shut his eyes and bowed his head. The silence in the room seemed to grow heavy. No one moved. No one spoke. The only sound was the whisper of wind through the tiny window above our heads. I shut my eyes, too. I tried to picture a boy and a girl, frightened and alone, and trying to sleep in the cold stone room. The door burst open. Strange men break in. They don't say a word. They rush to smother the boy and girl right in this room, right where I'm standing right now. I opened my eyes. Eddie was gazing at me, his expression troubled. This is wee-wee scary, he whispered. Yeah, I agreed, Mr. Stark started to tell us more, but the camera fell out of my hand. It clattered noisily on the stone floor. I bent to pick it up. Oh, look, Eddie, the lens broke, I cried. Shh, I missed what Mr. Stark said about this prince and princess, Eddie protested. But my camera! I shook it. I don't know why. It's not like shaking it would help fix the lens. What did he say? Did you hear? Eddie demanded. I shook my head. Shut the fuck up. I missed it. Obviously, I'm more concerned about my camera than the stupid tour. Also, where are our parents? I know they're at some sort of conference, but really? They just send us on a tour with some sort of weird pedophile? We walked over to a low cot against the wall. A three-legged wooden stool stood beside it, the only furniture in the chamber. Did the prince and princess sit here? I wondered. Did they stand on the bed and try to see out the window? What did they talk about? They probably played 20 questions. Did they wonder what was going to happen to them? Did they talk about the fun things that they would do if they were ever freed? When they returned home? That was a question, too. When they returned home.
That was a separate question. Just letting you know that it wasn't me screwing that up. It was all so sad, so horribly sad. I stepped up to the cot and rested my hand on it. It felt hard. Black markings on the wall caught my eyes. Writing? Had the prince or princess left a message on the wall? I leaned over the cot and squinted at the markings. Klaatu? Verata? Necktie! No. No message. Just cracks in the stone. Sue, come on, Eddie urged. He tugged my arm. Okay, okay, okay. I replied impatiently. I ran my hand over the cot again. It felt so lumpy and hard, so uncomfortable. I gazed up at the window. The gray light had darkened to black, dark as night out there. The stone walls suddenly seemed to close in on me. I felt as if I were in a dark closet, a cold, frightening closet. I imagined the walls squeezing in, choking me, smothering me. Oh my god, they're in the trash compactor in the Star Wars. Okay, is that how the princess and prince felt? Was I feeling the same way, the fear that they had over 500 years ago? With a heavy sigh, I let go of the cot and turned to Eddie. Let's get the fuck out of here, I said in a trembling voice. This room was just too frightening, too sad. We turned away from the cot and took a few steps toward the stairs and stopped. Hey! We both cried out in surprise. Mr. Starks and the tour group had disappeared. This is Chapter 6. It's Chapter 6. It's Chapter 6. Where did they go? Eddie cried in a shrill, startled voice. They left us here? They must be on their way back downstairs, I told him. I gave him a gentle push. Let's go. Eddie lingered close to me. You go first, he insisted quietly. You're not scared, are you? I teased, all alone in the terror. I don't know why I enjoy teasing my little brother so much. I knew he was scared. I was a little scared too, but I couldn't help it. As I said, Eddie doesn't always bring out the best in me. I led the way down the twisted stairs. As I peered down, they seemed even darker and steeper. Why didn't we hear them leave? Eddie demanded. Why did they leave so fast? It's late, I told him. I think Mr. Starks was eager to get everyone on the bus back to their hotels. The tower closes at 5, I think. I glanced at my watch. It was 5:20. Hurry, Eddie pleaded. I don't want to be locked in. This place gives me the creepers. Me too, I confessed. Squinting into the darkness, I stared down the steps. My sneakers slid on the smooth stone. Once again, I pressed one hand against the wall. It helped me keep my balance on the curving stairs. Where are they? Eddie demanded nervously, like a little bitch. Why can't we hear the others on the stairs? The air grew cooler as we climbed lower. A pale yellow light washed over the landing just below us. My hand swept through something soft and sticky. Semen. Cobwebs. Yuck! I could hear Eddie's rapid breathing behind me. The bus will wait for us, I told him. Just stay calm. And carry on, like all those things. Oh my god, if you've ever made one of those, kill yourself. And if you ever bought anything with those, kill yourself. And seriously, kill yourself. Just kill yourself. That's the most fucked out thing in the world right now. Okay. Mr. Starks won't drive off without us. Is anyone down there? Eddie screamed. Can anyone hear me? His shrill voice echoed down the narrow stone stairwell. No reply. Where are the guards? Eddie demanded. Eddie, please don't get worked up, I pleaded. It's late. The guards are probably closing up. Mr. Starks will be waiting for us down there, I promise you. We stepped into the pale light of the landing. The small cell we had seen before stood against the wall. Don't stop, Eddie pleaded, breathing hard. Keep going, Sue, hurry. Letting that one sink in. I put my hand on his shoulder to calm him. Eddie, we'll be fine, I said soothingly. We're almost down to the ground. But look. Eddie protested. He pointed frantically. I saw at once what he was troubling him. There were two stairways leading down, one to the left of the cell and one to the right. That's strange, I uttered, glancing from one to the other. I don't remember a second stairway. Which one's the right one? He stammered. I hesitated. I'm not sure, I replied. I stepped over to the one on the right and peered down. I could see very far. I couldn't see very far because it curved so sharply. Which one? Which one? Which one? Eddie repeated. I don't think it matters, I told him. I mean, they both go down, right? I motioned for him to follow me. Come on. I think this is the one we took when we climbed up. I took one step down, then stopped. I heard footsteps. Heavy footsteps coming up the stairs. Eddie grabbed my hand. "Who is that?" he whispered. Probably Mr. Starks. You know, we're on a tour with him right now," I told him. "He must be coming back up to get us." Eddie breathed a long sigh of relief. "Mr. Starks, is that you?" I called down. Silence. Except for the approaching footsteps. "Mr. Starks," I called in a tiny voice. When the dark figure appeared on the stairway below, I could see at once that it wasn't our tour guide. "Oh!" I uttered a startled cry as a huge man in a black cape stepped into view. His face was still hidden in the darkness, but his eyes glowed like burning coals as he glared up at Eddie and us from under the black, wide-brimmed hat. "Is this the way down?" He didn't reply. He didn't move. His eyes burned into mine. I struggled to see his face, but he kept it hidden in the shadow of the hat, pulled low over his forehead, much like Carmen Sandiego. I took a deep breath and tried again. "We've got separated from our group," I said. They must have been waiting for us. Is this the way down?" Again, he didn't reply. He glared up at us, menacingly. Dennis, the menacingly. "He's so big," I realized. "He blocks the entire stairway." "Sir," I startled, "my brother and I..." He raised a hand, a huge hand, covered in a black glove. He pointed up to us. "You will come with me now," he growled. I just stared at him. I didn't understand. Sue, that was a pretty blatant thing he said. He said, "You will come with me now." That's as simple as it gets, bitch. "You will come now," he repeated. "I do not want to hurt you, but if you try to escape, I will have no choice." Dead men tell no tales.
Chapter 7.
Eddie let out a sharp gasp. My mouth dropped open as the man edged closer, and then I realized who it was. "You're a guard here, right?" I asked. He didn't reply. You scared me. I let out a shrill laugh. I mean, that costume and everything. You work here, right? He stepped forward, bringing his black gloved hands up in front of him, moving the fingers. "I'm sorry we're so late," I continued. "We lost our group. I guess you want to close up so you can head home." He took another step closer. His eyes flared darkly. "You know why I'm here," he snarled. "No, I don't. I..." My words were cut off as he grabbed me by the shoulder. "Hey, let go of her," Eddie cried. But the caped man grabbed my brother too. His gloved fingers dug sharply into my shoulder. "Hey," I let out a cry of pain. He backed us against the cold stone wall.
"It'd be much better to get bagged against a cold stone wall, like the creamery. You could get some cake batter. Mixing some Butterfinger, that sounds like a good time."
I caught a glimpse of his face, a hard, angry face, a long, sharp nose, thin lips twisted into a snarl, looking all like Snape and shit. And the eyes, the cold, glowing eyes. "Let us go," Eddie demanded bravely. "We have to meet our group," I told the man shrilly. "We're leaving now. You can't keep us." He ignored our pleas. "Do not move," he uttered in a low growl. "Stand here. Do not try to escape." "Listen, sir, if we've done something wrong..." My voice trailed off. I watched him reach into the folds of his black cape. He struggled for a moment, then he pulled something out. At first, I thought they were rubber balls, three of them. But as he clicked them together, I realized he was holding some smooth, white stones. Ah, he smokes rock too. "What is going on here?" I asked myself. "Is he cray? Crazy and dangerous." "Listen, sir," Eddie started, "we have to go now." "Don't move," the cape man screamed. He shoved his cape violently behind him. "Don't move, and don't make a sound. You have my final warning." Eddie and I exchanged frightened glances. My back against the smooth stone wall, I tried edging slowly towards the nearest stairway. Mumbling to himself, the man concentrated on the three smooth white stones. He piled one on top of the other. He let out an angry cry as one of the stones fell to the floor. It bounced once and slid across the smooth floor. "This is our chance," I thought. I shoved Eddie toward the other stairwell. "Run!" I screamed.
This is the 8th chapter of A Night in Terror Tower.
Ba da 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 da. Hey, cool. "Do not move," the man bellowed, grabbing up the stone. He had a booming voice that thundered off the stone walls. "I warned you, you cannot escape me." My brother's eyes were bugging out of his head, but he didn't have time to be told twice to run. "Stop!" the caped man bellowed. His booming voice followed us as we scrambled down, stumbling on the twisting, curving stairs, our hands trailing against the cold stone of the tower wall. Down, down, turning so fast my head spun, but I squinted into the dim light and forced myself not to be dizzy, not to fall, not to give in to the terror that rose up over me. I just sound like a black preacher. My camera fell out of my coat pocket and clattered down the stairs. I didn't stop to pick it up. It was broken anyway. "Keep going," I urged Eddie. "Keep going. We're almost there." Or are we? The climb down seemed much longer. Our sneakers slapped against the stone steps, but even louder were the heavy footsteps of the caped man behind us. His bellowing cries boomed down the narrow tower, echoing all around us, as if being chased by 100 frightening men instead of one. Who is he? Why is he chasing us? Why is he so angry? The questions bounced through my mind as I scrambled frantically down the twisting stairs. No time for answers. No time for love, Dr. Jones. The big gray door rose up in front of us before we could stop. Eddie and I ran into it. "The exit! We're here!" I stammered. I could hear the rumble of the man's footsteps above us on the stairways. Coming closer. Closer. That was about to sing Closer by Nine Inch Nails, and I realized, why am I going to do that? "We're out! I thought we're safe!" Eddie shoved the door hard with his shoulder. Shoved it again. He turned to me, his chin quivering in fright. "It's locked. We're locked in." "No," I screamed. "Push." We both lowered our shoulders and pushed with all of our strength. No. The door didn't budge. The man lumbered closer, so close we could hear his muttering words. "We're trapped," I realized. "He's caught us." "Why does he want us? What is he going to do?" "One more try," I managed to choke out. Eddie and I turned back to the door.
Stay here.
Or there, specifically, the cape man commanded. But Eddie and I gave the door one desperate shove, and it finally moved. Scraping the stone floors, it slid open partway. Eddie sucked his breath in and pushed through the opening first. Then I squeezed through. Panting hard, we shoved the door behind us. The door had a long metal bar on the outside. I slid it all the way, bolting it, locking the caped man inside. "We're safe," I cried, spinning away from the door. But we weren't outside. We were in a huge, dark room. And a cruel voice in the room with us, a man's voice, laughing softly, told me we weren't out of trouble.
Chapter 9.
The laughter rose up in front of us, making us both gasp. "You have entered the king's dungeon. Abandon all hope," the man declared in a strange voice. Who are you?" I cried, but more laughter was the only reply. A single beam of pale green light from the low ceiling broke the darkness. Huddled close to Eddie, I squinted in the eerie glow, desperate to find a way to escape. "Over there, look," Eddie whispered, pointing. Across the room, I could see a barred cell against the wall. We crept forward a few steps, then we saw it. A bony hand reaching out from between the bars. "No," I gasped. Eddie and I jumped back. The pounding on the door behind us made us both jump again.
"You cannot escape," the man raged from outside of the door.
Eddie grabbed my hand as the man furiously pounded on the door. The sound boomed louder than thunder. Would the bolt hold? Ahead of us, two bony hands reached out from another cell. "This cannot be happening," Eddie choked out. "There aren't any dungeons today." "Another doorway," I whispered, trembling with fright as I stared at the hands poking out from the cells. "Find another doorway." My eyes frantically searched the darkness. Off in the distant corner, I glimpsed a slender crack of light. I started to run toward it and tripped over something. Something chained to the floor. It was a body. A body of a man sprawled on the floor, and I landed on his chest with a sickening thud. The chains rattled loudly as my foot
tangled in, as my foot tangled in them. Okay, I had it right. My knees and elbows hit the stone floor hard. Pain shot through my entire body. The old man didn't move. I scrambled up, stared down at him, and realized he was a dummy. Not real, just a dummy chained to the floor. Eddie, it's not real, I cried. Huh? He stared at me, his face twisted in confusion, in fright. It's not real, none of it, I repeated. Look, the hands in the dungeon cells, they're not moving. It's all a display, Eddie, just a display. Eddie started to reply, but the cruel laughter interrupted him. You have entered the king's dungeon. Abandon all hope, the voice repeated. Then more evil laughter. Just a tape, just a recording. There wasn't anyone in this room with us. No dungeon keeper, no dungeon master's guide. No one's rolling d20s getting crit hits on bitches. I let out a long sigh. My heart was still pounding like a bass drum. But I felt a little better knowing that we weren't trapped in a real dungeon. We're okay, I assured Eddie. And then the door burst open with a loud crack. And speaking of crack, the big man roared into the room, his cape fluttering behind him, his dark eyes glowing in victory. By the way, it didn't need to be sung. By the way, this episode is recorded on May 11th, the day before Mother's Day. So, you know, tell your mom you love her. Unless she's a cunt, then fuck that. I can't go out anywhere really today because the freeway is apparently fucked due to a Anchorman 2 casting call that's right by my house, I guess. People are into that, I guess. I like that movie. That's fine. This is so unnecessary. Why don't I just start it here? Boop! Put a cut in. Chapter 10. Eddie and I froze in the middle of the floor. The caped man froze, too. The only sound was his harsh, raspy breathing. We stared through the dim light at each other, frozen like the dummies in the cells. You cannot escape, the man growled once again. You know you will not leave the castle. His words sent a cold shiver down my back. Leave us alone, Eddie pleaded in a tiny voice. What do you want? I demanded. Why are you chasing us? The big man pressed his gloved hands against his waist. You know the answer, he replied flatly. Michael, flatly. He took a step forward toward Eddie and me. Are you ready to come with me now? He demanded. He didn't really demand, it was a question. I didn't reply. Instead, I leaned close to Eddie and whispered, get ready to run. I'm going to make sure it's printed out to say, get ready to rum, and just have a picture of a pineapple in a hammock. Eddie continued to stare straight ahead. He didn't blink or nod his head. I couldn't tell if he had even heard me. You know you have no choice, the man said softly. He reached both hands into the folds of his cape. Once again, he pulled out the mysterious white stones, and once again, I caught a glimpse of his dark eyes, saw the cold sore on his lips. It said cold sneer, but I changed it really quick to sore. God, I'm quick, guys. I'm really quick. You made a mistake, Eddie stammered. The man shook his head. The wide brim of the black hat cast tilting shadows on the floor.
I have made no mistake. Do not run from me. You know you must come with me.
Eddie and I didn't need a signal. Without saying a word to each other, without glancing at each other, we spun around and started to run. The man shouted in protest and took off after us. The room seemed to stretch on forever.
Is this haunted room actually stretching?
It must be the entire basement of the castle, I realized. Beyond the beam of light, the darkness rose like fog. My fear weighed down on me. My legs felt as if they were 1,000 pounds each. I'm moving in slow motion, I thought, struggling to speed up. Eddie and I had been crawling like turtles. I like turtles. He'll catch us. He'll catch us in 2 seconds. I glanced back when I heard the caped man cry out. He had tripped over the same dummy chained on the floor. He had fallen heavily. As he scrambled to his feet, my eyes searched the far wall of the door. For a fucking shit. All right, I'm going to drink and try to get my head back together. As he scrambled to his feet, my eyes searched the far wall for a door, or a hallway, or any kind of opening. Any hole will do, you know, any port in a storm. How do we get out of here? Eddie cried. We're trapped, Sue. No, I cried. I spotted a work table against the wall, cluttered with tools. I searched for something to use as a weapon. Didn't see anything. Grabbed a flashlight instead. Frantically pushed the button. Would it work? Yes, A white beam of light darted over the floor. I raised it to the far wall. "Eddie, look!" I whispered. A low opening in the wall, some kind of tunnel. A tunnel we could escape through. In another second, we were ducking our heads and stepping into the dark opening. I kept my light ahead of us, down at our feet. We had to stoop as we ran. The tunnel was curved at the top and not high enough for us to stand. The tunnel ran straight for a while, then curved down to the right. The air felt damp and cool. I could hear the trickle of the water nearby. "It's an old sewer," I told Eddie. "That means it has to lead us out somewhere."
"I hope so," Eddie replied breathlessly.
Running hard, we followed the curve of the sewer. My light leaped about, jumping, oh my god, I'm like out of breath. My light leaped about, jumping from the low ceiling to the damp stone floor. The light revealed wide metal rungs hanging from the ceiling. Eddie and I had to duck even lower to keep from smashing our heads against them. The light from my flashlight bounced wildly from the floor to the rungs along the top of the sewer. Eddie and I splashed through the puddles of dirty water. We both gasped when we heard footsteps behind us. Heavy, ringing footsteps. Thundering in the low tunnel, growing louder, louder. I glanced back, but the caped man was hidden by the curve of the sewer tunnel. His footsteps boomed steadily, rapidly. I could tell he wasn't far behind. He was going to catch up. I told myself in a panic. This tunnel is never going to end. Eddie and I can't run much further. He's going to catch us in this dark, damp sewer. And then what? What does he want? Why did he say he knew that we knew what he wanted? How could we know? I stumbled forward. The flashlight bumped against the wall and fell from my hand. It clattered to the tunnel floor and rolled in front of me. The light shone back into the tunnel, back toward the caped man. I saw him move into view, bent low, running hard. Oh! A frightened moan escaped my lips. I bent down to pick up the flashlight. It slid out my trembling hand. That was all the time the caped man needed. He grabbed Eddie with both hands. He pulled the black cape around my brother, trapping him. Then he reached for you. Or me. He reached for me. "I told you, there's no escape," he rasped. Alright, I need to take a break. I'm so lightheaded. What the fuck? Alright, I no longer feel like I just did the worst whippet ever. Let's get back to this. Alright.
Chapter number 11.
I ducked out of the caped man's grasp. With another frightened groan, I grabbed the flashlight off the floor. I planned to use it as a weapon, to shine it on the caped man's eyes, or swing it as a head, just like Border Patrol agents do to Hispanic people. But I didn't get a chance. I froze in horror as the beam of light bounced down the tunnel, and I saw the rats. Hundreds of them. Hundreds of chittering gray rats. The darting light made their eyes glow red as fire. The rats came scrabbling over the sewer floor. They snapping their jaws hungrily, gnashing their jagged teeth as they came charging at us. Their shrill whistling and chittering echoed through the tunnel. The terrifying sound made my breath catch in my throat. The tiny red eyes glowed in the light as they scrabbled towards us. Does he mean scrambled? Because he keeps saying scrabbled. It's funny because it's scrabbled and he can't use the right word, but Scrabble's a game where you put word. As they pulled their scrawny bodies over the hard floor, their tails slithered behind them like dark snakes. The caped man saw them too. He leaped back in surprise. Eddie came tearing out from under the cape. He gulped in shock as his eyes locked on the charging rats. "Jump!" I cried. "Eddie, jump! Might as well jump, Eddie!" Because it's Eddie Van Halen. Oh, God, I am on some next-level shit. Eddie didn't move. We both gaped at the rats in horror. A churning sea of whistling, chewing, red-eyed rats. A living tidal wave of rats. "Jump! Jump now!" I shrieked. I raised both hands. Jumped. Eddie jumped, too. We grabbed onto the metal bars embedded in the sewer roof. Pulling myself up, I frantically lifted my feet as high as I could from the floor. Higher! Higher! As the rats charged underneath me, a foul odor rose up, nearly choking me as the rats ran past. I could hear the tap, tap, tap of their long toenails against the floor, hear the swish of their sweeping tails. I couldn't see the rats in the darkness, but I could hear them. I could feel them. They jumped at my shoes, scratched at my legs with their sharp claws, and kept coming. I turned to see the caped man start to run back. He stumbled with lurching steps as he tried to flee the thundering wave of rats. His arm shot forward as if reaching for safety. The black cape whipped up behind him. The wide-brimmed hat flew off his head and floated to the floor. A dozen rats pounced on it, climbed all over it, and began chewing it to pieces. The man's footsteps echoed in the tunnel as he ran faster. Rats leaped up at his cape, clawing it, snapping their jaws, and shrieking excitedly. A second later, he disappeared around the curve of the sewer. The rats scrambled noisily after him. As they vanished around the curve, the sounds all blended together became a roar that rang through the long sewer. A roar of horror. That's a whole paragraph. A roar of horror. My arms were both aching, throbbing with pain, but I kept my feet high off the floor. I didn't let go of the metal rung until I was sure all the rats had disappeared. The roar faded into the distance. I heard Eddie's heavy breathing. He let out a sharp groan and dropped to the floor. I let go of the bar and lowered myself too. I waited for my heart to stop pounding, for the blood to stop throbbing in my temples. God damn it! That was a close call, Eddie murmured. His chin trembled. His face was as gray as the tunnel walls. I shuddered. I knew I'd seen the hundreds of tiny eyes in my dreams. Hear the clicking of the long toenails and the swish of their scraggly tails. Let's just get the fuck out of this disgusting sewer, I cried. Mr. Starks must be frantic searching for us. Eddie picked up the flashlight and handed it to me. I can't wait to get back on the tour bus, he said. I can't wait to get away from this awful tower. I can't believe we've been chased by a crazy person through a sewer. This can't really be happening to us, Sue. Oh, it's happening, I declared, shaking my head. I suddenly had another thought. Oh, a girl had two thoughts? Girls. Mom and Dad are probably out of their meeting, I said. They're probably worried sick about us. Not as worried as I am, Eddie exclaimed like a little bitch. I beamed the light ahead, keeping it down on the sewer floor, and we started walking. The tunnel floor rose up and curved to the left. We started to climb. There's got to be an end to the sewer, I muttered. It's got to end somewhere. A faint roar up ahead made me cry out. More rats! Eddie and I stopped and listened and collaborated. Hey! I uttered excitedly when I realized it was a different sound. The sound of wind rushing into a tunnel. That meant we had to be close to the end, and that the sewer emptied somewhere outside. Let's go! I cried excitedly. The beam of light bounced ahead of us as we started to run. The tunnel curved again and then suddenly ended. I saw a metal ladder reaching straight up to a large, round hole in the tunnel ceiling. Gazing up at the hole, I saw the night sky. Eddie and I let out shouts of joy. We scrambled up the ladder and I pulled myself up right behind him. It was a cold, damp night, but we didn't care. The air smelled so fresh. So clean, and we were out of that fucking sewer, and definitely out of Terror Tower. Away from the frightening man in the black cape, I gazed around quickly, trying to figure out where we were. The tower tilted up towards us, a black shadow against the blue-black sky. The lights had all been off. The tiny guardhouse lay dark and empty, not another soul in sight. I saw the low wall that divided the tower from the rest of the world, and then I found the stone path that led to the exit and the parking lot. Our shoes thudded over the smooth stone as we hurried toward the parking lot. A pale half-moon slid out from behind wispy clouds. It cast a shimmering light over the whispering trees and the long stone wall. This one has quite a few of those sentences where he's like, I just said a bunch of bullshit. I'm going to add in a random sentence or a random paragraph, a two-line paragraph, that just has way too many adjectives in it, and that'll make it seem like I know how to write. It all suddenly looked unreal. Tournament 3. Without stopping, I glanced back at the old castle. The moonlight shone off the jutting towers as if casting them in a pale spotlight. Real people walked on this path hundreds of years ago, I thought, and real people died in that
tower. With a shiver, I turned back and kept jogging. Eddie and I moved through the open gate and past the wall. We're back in modern times, I thought, back where we're safe. But our happiness didn't at last long. The parking lot shimmered darkly in the pale moonlight, empty. The tour bus was gone. Eddie and I both turned to search up and down the street, the long, empty street. They left us, Annie murmured with a sigh. How are we going to get back to the hotel? I started to answer, but stopped when I saw the man. A tall, white-haired man, limping toward us, moving fast, pointing and calling. You there! You there! Oh no, I thought warily, feeling my body freeze in fear. Now what? To go to chapter 12, keep listening to the podcast. To go to chapter 12, keep listening to the podcast. Chapter 12!
You there! You there!
The man's shoulder dipped into the big gray overcoat he wore as he charged at us, limping with each step. Eddie and I huddled close together, staring back at him as he hurried across the empty parking lot. His white hair tumbled out from under a small gray cap. The overcoat hung down nearly to his ankles and bulged where his crotch was, over his skinny frame. He stepped up in front of us and waited to catch his breath. His tiny eyes caught the moonlight as he narrowed them at us, studying Eddie, then me.
Oh, R.L. Stine, what are you trying to say? The people that have little eyes that are narrowed are good at studying? Is that what you're trying to say?
Racist. Are you the two kids the bus driver was looking for? He asked in a shrill, high voice. He had a different accent from Mr. Stark's. I think it was Scottish. Eddie and I nodded. Well, I'm the night guard here, the man told us. There's no one here but me after closing.
Where's our bus? Eddie asked quietly.
It left, the man replied. It searched all over, but he couldn't wait any longer. What happened? Did you get lost in there? He motioned back towards the tower.
A man chased us, Eddie replied breathlessly. He said we had to come with him. He was really scary and
man. What man? The night guard eyed us suspiciously.
The man in the black cape, I replied, and the black hat. There's a black hat and cape and, you know, hat combo. They sell them as a package.
He chased us in the tower. There's no man in the tower, the guard replied, shaking his head.
I told you, I'm the only one here after closing. But he's in there, I cried. He chased us. He was going to hurt us. He chased us through the sewer and the rats.
Sewer? What were you two doing in the sewer? The guard demanded.
We have rules here about where tourists are allowed. If you break the rules, we can't be responsible. He sighed. Now, you come out here with a wild story about a man in a black cape and running through the sewers.
Wild stories! Wild stories! Eddie and I exchanged glances. We could both see that this man wasn't going to believe us.
How do we get back to our hotel? Eddie asked. Our parents will be really worried.
I glanced at the street. There were no cars or buses in sight.
You got any money? The guard asked, replacing his cap.
There's a phone box in the corner. I can call for a taxi. I reached into my jeans pocket and felt the heavy coins my parents had given me before Eddie and I set out for the tour. Then I breathed a long sigh of relief.
We have money, I told the guard.
It'll cost you at least 15 or 20 pounds from way out here, he warned.
That's okay, I'm fucking loaded, I replied.
Our parents gave us British money. If we don't have enough, my parents will pay the driver, he nodded. Then he turned to Eddie.
You look all done in, lad. Did he get frightened up in the tower?
Eddie swallowed hard. I just want to get back to the hotel, he murmured. The guard nodded, then tucked his hands into the pockets of the big overcoat. He led the way to the phone booth. The big black taxi pulled up about 10 minutes later. The driver was a young man with long, wavy blonde hair.
"What hotel?" he asked, leaning out the passenger window.
The Barclay, I told him. Eddie and I climbed into the back. It was warm in the back of the taxi. It felt so great sitting down. As we pulled away from the
Terror Tower,
I didn't glance back. I never wanted to see that old castle again. The car rolled smoothly through the dark streets. The taxi meter clicked pleasantly. The driver hummed to himself.
I shut my eyes and leaned my head back against the leather seat. I tried not to think about the frightening man who had chased us in the tower, but I couldn't force him from my mind. Soon, we were back in the center of London, cars and taxis jammed in the streets. We passed brightly lit theaters, restaurants, Morrissey. The taxi pulled up the oh, wow. All right, hold up. The taxi pulled up to the front of the Barclay Hotel and eased to a stop. The driver slid open the window behind his seat and turned to me. "That'll be £15.60." Eddie sat up drowsily. He blinked several times, surprised to see that we had reached our destination. I pulled the big, heavy coins from my pocket. I held them up to the driver. "I don't really know what's what," I confessed. "Can you take the right amount from these?" "Yeah, trust a packy with that." When I was in England, I was hanging out with the buddies from the Hat Decides podcast, a quiet panelologist at work, and they had a friend who was Indian and was explaining to me that people there are really racist towards Indians and call them packies, but I didn't really fully understand because they're not from Pakistan, and it's really hard being racist. Like, I tried to be racist towards them, but it was very, very difficult. I felt bad, you know. Oh, well. The driver glanced at the coins in my hand, sniffed, then raised his eyes to me. "What are those?" he asked coldly. "Coins," I replied. I didn't know what else to say. "Do I have enough to pay you?" He stared back at me. "Do you have any real money, or are you going to pay me with play money?" "I don't understand," I stammered. My hands started to tremble. I nearly dropped the coins. "I don't either," the driver replied sharply. "But I do know those aren't real coins. We use British pounds here, miss." His expression turned angry. He glared at me through the little window in the glass partition. "Now, are you going to pay me in British pounds, or are we going to have some major fucking trouble? I want my money now. Give Dirty his money."
Chapter 13.
I pulled the coins away from him and raised them close to my face. It was dark in the back of the taxi and hard to see. The coins were large and round. They felt heavy, made of real gold or silver. It was too dark to read the words on them. "Why would my parents give me play money?" I asked the driver. He shrugged. "I don't know your shitty parents." "Well, they will pay you the £15, I told him. I struggled to shove the big coins in my pocket. £15.60 plus tip, the driver said, frowning at me. "Where are your parents? In the hotel?" I nodded. Yeah. "They were at a meeting at the hotel, but they're probably up in the room now. We'll get them to come down and pay you. In real money, if you please," the driver said, rolling his eyes. "If they're not down here in 5 minutes, I'll come after you." "They'll be right down, I promise," I told him. I pushed open the door and scrambled out of the cab. Eddie followed me onto the sidewalk, shaking his head. "This is weird," he muttered. A red uniformed doorman held the hotel door open for us, and we hurried into the huge, chandeliered lobby. Most people seemed to be headed the other way, going out for dinner.
"I guessed.
It's nice detective work, cunt." My stomach grumbled. I suddenly realized I was starving. Eddie and I made our way past the long front desk. We were walking so fast we nearly collided with a bellman pushing a big cart stacked high with suitcases. To our right, I could hear dishes clattering in the hotel restaurant. The aroma of fresh baked bread floated in the air. The elevator doors opened. A red-haired woman in a fur coat stepped off, walking a white toy poodle. Eddie got tangled in the leash. I had to pull him free so we wouldn't miss the elevator. We stumbled into the elevator. As the door slid shut, I pushed 6. "What was wrong with the money?" Eddie asked. I shrugged. "I don't know. I guess it's Dad's mistake." The door slid open on 6. We hurried side by side down the long, carpeting hall to our room. I stepped around a room service tray on the floor. Someone had left half a sandwich and part of a bowl of fruit. My stomach rumbled again, reminding me of how hungry I was. "Here we are." Eddie ran up to the door, marked 626, and knocked. "Hey, Mom! Dad! It's us!" "Open up," I called impatiently. Eddie knocked again, a little louder. "Hey." We pressed our ears close to the door and listened. My parents were making love. It was a beautiful sound, and it's nice to know that even though, you know, a lot of relationships fall apart and crumble, but not theirs, you know, they're still passionate. They just make beautiful love very, very loud. Oh, sorry, that must have been a typo. We put our ears close to the door and listened. Silence. No fucking. No footsteps. No voices. "Hey, are you in there?" Eddie called. He knocked again. "Hurry up, it's us!"
He turned to me. "They must be out of that meeting by now," he muttered. I cut my hands around my mouth.
"Mom! Dad! Are you there?"
I called in. No reply. Eddie's shoulders slumped and let out an unhappy sigh. "Now what?"
"Are you having trouble?"
a woman's voice asked. I turned to see a hotel maid. She wore a gray uniform and a small white cap over her short dark hair. She had been pushing a cart loaded with towels. She stopped across from Eddie and me. "Our parents are still at a meeting," I told her. "My brother and I were locked out." She studied us for a moment. Then she stepped away from the cart and raised a large keychain filled with keys.
"I'm not really supposed to do this," she said,
shuffling through the clattering keys.
"But I guess it's okay to let you kids in."
She put a key in the lock and turned it and pushed open the door for us. Eddie and I both thanked her and told her she was a lifesaver. Lightsaber, not lightsaber. That'd be much cooler if she was. She smiled and moved on down the hall, pushing her towel cart. The room was dark. I clicked on the light as Eddie and I stepped in. "They're not here," I said softly. "No sign of them." "They probably left a note," Eddie replied. "Maybe they had to go out with the people for the meeting, or maybe they're down at the restaurant, or, you know, they're probably drunk. You know how they are." Our room was actually a suite. A front room and two bedrooms. Turning on the lights as I went, I made my way to the desk in the corner. A writing pad and pen rested in the center of the desk, but the pad was blank. No message. No message from Mom or Dad on the bed table either. "That's weird," Eddie muttered. I crossed the room and stepped into their bedroom. I clicked on the ceiling light and glanced around. The room had been made up. The bed was smooth and unwrinkled. There was no message for us anywhere. The dresser top lay bare. No clothes tossed over the chair. No shoes on the floor. No briefcases or notepads from their meeting. No sign that anyone had ever been in the room. I turned and saw that Eddie had moved to the closet. He pushed the sliding door open all the way.
"Sue, look," he shouted. "No clothes. Mom and Dad's clothes are clothes. They're all gone."
A heavy feeling of dread started in my stomach and weighted down my entire body.
"What is going on here?" I cried.
And we'll find out next time. That is the end of part one of A Night in Terror Tower by R.L. Stine on Dune Reads Goosebumps.
This is where I normally ramble a bit, but oh God, I'm so lightheaded. If I keep talking, I'm gonna fall asleep. Right here. Okay, everyone, I need you to send me some positive vibes. Use the force, because I need to still tell people to stay spooky. Seriously, I might pass out. Wait, 1 second.
Reading too quick and too much is no good. Alright, ready for this? Here we go. Stay spooky, bitches.